here. I think it was about 3 or 4 years ago that we were here the last time. As you know, there's a lot of conflict going on idea-wise against the nation of Israel right now in the Middle East. Iran wants it eliminated. Egypt, you know, now they've overthrown the former government, and the new government says we're going to cut off all friendly relationships with Israel, and Israel's now going to be an enemy of ours. Syria, you know, all the uproar going on there now, and don't know what the final outcome of that is going to be. But the Word of God is dealing with, interestingly, the very same nations that are in the news today with regard to the nation of Israel. And in the light of that, we want to take a look at what the Bible teaches us about the future of the nation of Israel. And so we'll begin here along these lines from Daniel 11, and John, I'm sure, has already dealt with this, but we're going to work our way through it some. Daniel chapter 11. And it's talking about an attack against the nation of Israel. An attack against the nation of Israel. When you look at verse 40 of Daniel chapter 11, this is what it says. At the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots, horsemen, and with many ships, and he shall enter the countries, overwhelm them, and pass through. Now, right away, we have to ask several questions about this. What is meant by the time of the end? Interestingly, the Bible divides all of history into two ages. The first age, the Apostle Paul called in Titus the present age. That is the age before Messiah comes back to planet Earth in his second coming to restore God's theocratic kingdom rule back to planet Earth again. So that's the age we're living in right now. And then the second age, after the present pre-messianic age, is the age when Messiah is here upon planet Earth and ruling the world for the last 1,000 years of our present planet Earth's history. And in Hebrews chapter 6, verse 5, that's called the age to come, the age to come after our present pre-messianic age. When it talks here about the time of the end, there's going to be attacks going on. This is talking about the very end part of our present pre-messianic age before Jesus comes back in his second coming to rule the world on behalf of God. The implication is this would be referring then to the last 7 years before the second coming of Christ, which the Bible would refer to as the tribulation period. So what's being described here now from verse 40 to verse 45 of Daniel 11 would be events that will transpire during the future 7-year tribulation period. So that's what was meant by the time of the end. And so that would refer to the 7-year tribulation period. But then the next question is, who are the king of the south and the king of the north referred to here in verse 40? Thankfully, verses 1 through 35 of Daniel chapter 11 have already been fulfilled historically. In fact, the first 35 verses of Daniel 11 were fulfilled even before the birth of the Lord Jesus here into planet Earth. And if you were to read verses 1 through 35 of Daniel 11, you find the king of the south and the king of the north referred to repeatedly. And since that's already been fulfilled, we know that in the first 35 verses of this chapter, the king of the south was always the nation of Egypt, directly south of Israel, and the king of the north, in verses 1 through 35, was always the nation of Syria, directly north of Israel. Now that's past history. But now, when we come to verse 40, we're talking about the future, and here we have the king of the south and the king of the north referred to again. And so, since Daniel is not told, they are different from the king of the south, verse 1 through 35, or the king of the north, in verses 1 through 35. We're safe in concluding, therefore, that the king of the south, here in verse 40, is referring to the nation of Egypt, and the king of the north here in verse 40 is referring to the nation of Syria, directly north of Israel. And we're being told here that there's going to be a war going on involving those two nations, Egypt in the south and Syria in the north. And the question is, it says, they're going to attack him or come against him. Well, who's the him here in verse 40? Well, if you were to look at verses 36 to 39, the verses right before verse 40, we have described there a ruler who speaks monstrous things against the God of gods. This is a powerful human ruler who is speaking out horrendous things against the true and the living God. And we're told there that he wants to exalt and magnify himself above every god or goddess that's ever been worshipped, because he wants to be worshipped exclusively as God. That is a description of the Antichrist. In fact, if you were to look at Paul in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, where he talks about how in the future tribulation period, Antichrist is going to take his seat in a new temple the Jews will have rebuilt by that time, and he's going to make the claim that he's God. And Paul practically quotes verbatim from Daniel 11, verses 36 to 39. So in the context, the him of verse 40 is the Antichrist. And so that's saying that during the future seven-year tribulation period, Antichrist will be attacked jointly by Syria and Egypt at the same time. Now, a little bit of background. John's taken you through the book of Daniel. You know from Daniel chapter 7, it foretells that in the future there's going to be a revived form of the Roman Empire. And that at first, this revived Roman Empire will consist of 10 divisions federated together for power in the world and co-ruled at the same time by 10 equal co-rulers. And as Daniel's watching that revelation about this future revived Roman Empire, all of a sudden there's an 11th ruler that rises to power from within that future revived empire. And in Daniel 7, he's called the Little Horn. And we're told there that as he rises to power from within that future revived Roman Empire, he will overthrow 3 of the original 10 rulers of that revived Roman Empire and thereby gain controlling authority over that revived Roman Empire. Now the question is this: how will these two Middle Eastern nations, Syria and Egypt, jointly attack the Antichrist, the head of the future revived Roman Empire, at the same time? Because there's a problem here. At this time, Egypt and Syria, in that future time, they're Middle Eastern nations. But at this point in time in the future, and it'll become obvious as we go further through Daniel 11, at this time in the future, Antichrist will not be in the Middle East, where Syria and Egypt and Israel are located. So how will Syria and Egypt jointly attack the Antichrist, the head of the future revived Roman Empire? Well, it seems to us that Daniel chapter 9 and verse 27 gives us a clue to that. Here we raise the question, how will Egypt and Syria jointly attack the Antichrist? According to Daniel chapter 9, verse 27, at the very beginning of the future seven-year tribulation period, Antichrist will confirm a covenant with many for 1 week. And the word week there means seven. It's the last 7 years of a future program that God has designed for the nation of Israel. Now, Hebrew scholars point out that the word here, confirm and covenant, make it very clear this is going to be a very strong binding covenant between Antichrist somewhere else in the world on the one hand and Israel on the other hand in the Middle East. That at the very beginning of the seven-year tribulation period, and this is the event that will begin the seven-year tribulation period, will be this binding seven-year covenant being established between Antichrist on the one hand and the nation of Israel on the other hand. In fact, some Hebrew scholars say the language is so strong that it indicates that Antichrist of this covenant will so strongly ally Israel in the Middle East with his revived Roman Empire that he will actually regard Israel as an extension of himself and his empire in the Middle East, and therefore he will regard any attack against Israel as an attack against him, so that through that binding 7-year covenant, he will guarantee Israel's national security and say to them, if you're ever attacked by another power, I will come immediately into the Middle East and deliver you from that attack by your enemies. And so that's the way, from what we can discern, that Syria and Egypt will jointly attack the Antichrist, who's living somewhere else in the world, but they will jointly attack his ally Israel in the Middle East. And so, keeping this covenant, Antichrist is going to go into the Middle East, keeping this covenant with Israel. And so here we have in Daniel chapter 11 and now verse 41, actually the end of verse 40, Antichrist's reaction to this joint attack of Egypt and Syria against his ally Israel. We're told at the end of verse 40, he will enter in and overrun. He will enter the countries, overwhelm them, and pass through, keeping his covenant commitment to Israel. He will invade the Middle East to deal with these two enemies of his ally Israel. He's going to enter into the Middle East. He's going to overwhelm some of the people there in the Middle East. He's going to pass through the Middle East there, again, keeping his covenant commitment to Israel. And from what we can discern by the end of verse 40, he's going to attack first north of Israel, evidently going after Syria, the northern neighbor of Israel. And he's going to deal with Syria. He's going to conquer Syria and just really go after it very fiercely to eliminate at least the military power of Syria at that particular time. But then we're told further, when we come to verse 41, that after he deals with Syria, north of Israel, he marches his army south through the glorious land. What would be the glorious land to Daniel? The land of Israel. Once he deals with Syria, north of Israel, he's going to march his army south down through the land of Israel. And as he's coming south, we're told here, he shall enter also the glorious land. Many shall be overthrown, but these shall escape from his hand, Edom, Moab, and the prominent people of Ammon. Now, as you know, back in Bible times, Edom, Moab, and Ammon were three Gentile nations that were on the east side of the Jordan River. They were the eastern neighbor of Israel back in Bible times. It's where today the nation of Jordan would be located today. And so we're being told here that as he's marching his army south from Syria down through the land of Egypt, he won't take the time to cross over to the east side of the Jordan River to deal with whoever is living over there. And so if Jordan continues to be the nation there, he won't take the time during the tribulation period to go over to the east side to deal with Jordan, east of the nation of Israel. And the reason is he wants to go down to Egypt and deal with the other enemy that attacked his ally, Israel. And he will get down to Egypt. We point out here that in Daniel's time, those three nations were on the eastern side of the Jordan River. Why won't he attack east of the Jordan River? Because he wants to get to Egypt. And he does get down to Egypt. He does get down to Egypt. And in verses 42 and 43, this is what we read. He shall stretch out his hand against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. He shall have power over the treasures of gold and silver, over all the precious things of Egypt. Also the Libyans and Ethiopians shall follow at his heels. What Dan is being told here is this: Antichrist will get down to Egypt, and he's going to be able to conquer the whole nation of Egypt, way over to its western border with Libya, same nation of Libya that's there today, you know, where Muammar Gaddafi was until he was overthrown last year and then executed last year. And the Hebrew literally says that the Libyans will be at his heels. The implication is, once he gets over to Egypt's western border with Libya, he'll stop his western process. He won't attack Libya. He'll turn around, so the Libyans will be behind him. And then it says that the Ethiopians will be at his heels. Now, in Daniel's day, the nation of Ethiopia is not the same nation of Ethiopia that's in that part of the world today. Since then, Ethiopia has relocated from being the southern neighbor of Egypt, and it's gone more to the east and a little bit further south. From what we can discern from the best scholarship from back in Bible times, what was the nation of Ethiopia in Daniel's day is now the nation of Sudan, the nation of Sudan. It's an Arab nation, and it's ruled over in the north by a radical Islamic political party. And I don't know what you've read about or heard about what's been going on in Sudan over recent years, but Sudan in the north, again, is dominated by this radical Islamic government. But most of the people in the south are not Muslims. Most of the people in the southern part of Sudan are Christians and animists. And for a good many years, the Muslims from the north were coming down and were killing Christians and animists. In fact, some mission boards that have worked there, the southern part of Sudan, have indicated that even some Christian pastors were taken and literally crucified on crosses by the Muslims in the northern part of Sudan. And one of the major newspapers in Baltimore found out, or at least they were told, that the Muslims from the northern part of Sudan were coming in the south, and they were kidnapping Christian and animist women and children, dragging them up to the capital city of Sudan and putting them in the slavery market and selling them as slaves to wealthy Arabs. And the newspaper in Baltimore sent two of their reporters over to investigate this. And they went up to the capital city, and sure enough, they found Christian women and animist women and children being sold to wealthy Arabs as slaves. And to prove it, they personally purchased a little boy from the south and carried him back down and found relatives and turned him over to their relatives and had pictures of this. And it was on the front page of one of the Sunday editions of the Baltimore newspaper, proving this is what's going on there in Sudan. Now, you may know that last July, there was an election took place in that government of Sudan, in that country of Sudan. And the election ended up that the southern part voted to break away totally from the northern part, from the Islamic part, and become now a totally independent nation of their own, where they could live in peace as Christians and animists. And although that worked out that way, the ones in the north are still coming down with bomber planes. They have been bombing schools in the southern part, and they're still coming down to try to kidnap Christian people and animist people and take them up there to sell them as slaves to wealthy Arabs. So that what we're being told here is, when Antichrist gets down to Egypt, when he comes down to what back in his day, or back in ancient times, was Ethiopia, now Sudan, he won't continue further south out of Egypt to attack that area. He will turn around so that what the scriptures say, that these people will be at his heels. This is God's way of saying that when Antichrist comes to Egypt, he will conquer the entire nation of Egypt from its west to its south. And then once he does that, notice he's going to have power over the treasures of gold and silver and over all the precious things of Egypt, and also the Libyans and Ethiopians shall follow at his heels, And it will look as if that part of the Middle East is going to come under the control of the Antichrist. But then notice what we're told in the next portion here. Disturbing news from the east and the north are going to trouble him. While he's in Egypt, mopping up Egypt, robbing it, plundering it of all its wealth and resources, he's going to receive very disturbing news both from the north and from the east. And obviously, again, here the question is, what will be the essence of that disturbing news from the north and from the east? I would propose to you, this is where another significant prophetic portion of the Old Testament is going to be fulfilled. And that's the prophecy in Ezekiel chapters 38 and 39. Ezekiel chapters 38 and 39. And Ezekiel 38 and 39, God is foretelling another massive military force composed of troops from several nations together that are going to come against the nation of Israel in the Middle East, in the end times, in the end times. And many of these are named. Notice Daniel 11:44, news from the east, from the north shall trouble him. Ezekiel 38, attack against Israel is what I'm proposing to you here this morning. We have several attackers named there. Persia. What is modern-day Persia? Iran. And you know what Iran is doing today? Ever since the Shah of Iran was overthrown back in 1979, etc., Iran has been ruled over by a radical Islamic political government. And they have vowed they are going to totally eliminate Israel from the Middle East. This is why they are trying to develop nuclear warheads. And they're also experimenting with rockets that they could bombard the nation of Israel and even the United States of America, if they can, with nuclear weapons. And so Persia in the future is what we know today as Iran, because Iran was where the capitals and everything of the ancient kingdom of Persia were located back in the days of Daniel and Ezekiel. By the way, Ezekiel, who received this revelation from God in Ezekiel 38, was a contemporary of Daniel. They knew each other. Both of them had been carried captive from their homeland of Israel over to Babylon, you know, for the 70-year captivity of the Jews. So they knew each other. They probably were receiving these two revelations, Daniel 11 and Ezekiel 38, around the same period of time from God as to what's going to happen to Israel in the future. So we read here, Persia is going to bring armed forces against Israel in the future. Ethiopia, there it is again, the same Ethiopia of Daniel's day, but now it's modern-day Sudan, and it hates Israel with a passion, wants to see Israel eliminated from the Middle East. Libya are with them, the nation of Libya, and again, a western neighbor there of Egypt. And you know that now that Muammar Gaddafi has been overthrown, what may be a temporary new government of Libya have made it very clear from now on it's going to be Islamic Sharia law enforced on everybody within the nation of Libya. And, you know, Muammar Gaddafi hated Israel as well. And when they'd have their pan-Arab conferences there in the Middle East periodically, he was one of the most outspoken men to say, we must deal with Israel and get rid of Israel from the Middle East. So Libya is going to send troops together with Iran and Sudan, etc. All of them coming with shield and helmet, Gomer and all its troops, the house of Togarmah from the far north and all its troops. Now, according to the best scholarship we have today from ancient times, Gomer and Togarmah were two tribal groups of people in what today is the modern nation of Turkey, the modern nation of Turkey. And I don't know if you have kept up to date of what's been going on in the nation of Turkey, but U.S. News and World Report, a secular magazine here, about 10 years ago ran an article with this fascinating title, Will Turkey Be the Next Iran? Will Turkey Be the Next Iran? And they pointed out that about 10 years ago there was an election that took place in Turkey to see which political party would end up controlling the, not the national government, but the city government of the capital city of Turkey. And the party that won that election was a radical Islamic political party. And the leader of that party, in U.S. News and World Report, his statement was this, our next goal is to gain complete control of the national government of Turkey. And when we do that, we will come after Israel. And we will break off all relations with NATO. You know, in 1923, Turkey adopted a secular government. And that's the way it continued from 1923 up until about 2 or 3 years ago, it was a totally secular government. And after World War II, Turkey wanted to be part of NATO, and maybe even part of the European Union, if they could, as a secular government. And that secular government had actually arranged and carried out military, joint military maneuvers with the military of Israel. Well, they had already scheduled another joint maneuver, military maneuver with Israel for about a year or two ago. But within the last 3 years, the Islamic political party overthrew the secular government, and they canceled the schedule between Turkey and Israel, joint military maneuvers together, and they rescheduled it with Syria, directly north of the nation of Israel. And so this is indicating that Turkey, in the future, is going to be sending military forces together with Iran, Sudan, and Libya. Now, there's another nation name that's going to play a role in this military attack against Israel in the future. Here we notice Persia equals modern Iran, Ethiopia, modern Sudan, Gomer Togarma, modern Turkey. Then, when you go over to later in chapter 38, around verses 14 and following, we have Gog of Magog name, both earlier in chapter 38, but then later in chapter 38, Gog of Magog. Notice what it says. You will come from your place out of the far north, you and many peoples with you, all of them riding on horses, a great company and a mighty army. You will come up against my people Israel like a cloud to cover the land. Now the Hebrew says that Gog is coming from the remotest, the farthest parts of the north, is what the Hebrew says. If you were to get hold of a map of that part of the Middle East and put your finger on Israel, and then go straight north as far as you can, and still end in landmass, you'd end up in the heartland of what you and I have known historically as Russia or the Soviet Union. And the implication here seems to be that Russia is going to play a key role in taking the conglomeration of armed forces from these other nations to come with a massive military force against the nation of Israel there in the Middle East. The time of this attack. According to Ezekiel 38 and 39, when will this take place? Well, in Ezekiel 38, verse 18, it says it'll be in the latter days. The latter days of what? The latter days of this present pre-Messianic age we're now living in, the latter days before Messiah comes back to planet Earth in the second coming to restore God's kingdom rule, which again would be an implication. It's going to be during the seven-year tribulation period, the last 7 years before Jesus comes out of heaven to planet Earth in the second coming to restore God's theocratic kingdom. So the latter days of this present age before Messiah comes to rule the world, it would in all likelihood be during the seven-year tribulation period that this massive military force is going to come against the nation of Israel. So the attack will be in the latter years. We're told, you go over it like to verse 8, it will be in the latter years after Jews have been brought out of the nations and gathered from many people on the mountains of Israel. Notice, that regathering of Jews from many nations has been going on since 1948. As a result of the General Assembly of the United Nations in November of 1947 issuing a mandate to the effect that the land that the Romans renamed Palestine in the Middle East was to be subdivided into two divisions, one division to be given to Arab people for an independent Arab state there in the Middle East, the other division to give it to Jews, they could return to their homeland and reinstitute their ancient nation state of Israel in their ancient homeland. The UN mandated that. And that was in November of 47. The very next year, March or May of 1948, in the spring, Israel announced the new state of Israel there in the Middle East. And so this attack would take place when a people of Israel come from many other nations back to their homeland. And so that's been going on, again, since 1948 on a grand scale. And they've really been settled there now for decades. But this attack, from what we're told, will take place when all the people of Israel dwell so safely, when all the people of Israel dwell so safely that they have no defenses of their own. It says they don't have walls around their cities, using the language of ancient times when this was written. Now, is that the attitude of Israel today? Do they feel so safely in the Middle East right now that they have no defenses of their own to defend themselves against enemy attacks? They feel they don't have to. They're so safe and so secure. No way is that the attitude of Israel today. Israel today is loaded to the hilt with some of the most sophisticated military hardware ever devised by mankind. They've even taken some of our best weaponry and made them even more effective than our troops can with what our country has developed so far. Well then, if this is going to be at a time when Israel feels so safe and so secure in the future, they've let down their own guard as far as their own military defense. That certainly isn't true today. And so this can't be taking place until some future period of time when they feel so safe and so secure that they let down their own guard. Will there be such a period of time? Yes. During the first 3.5 years of the future 7-year tribulation period. As we noted earlier, the event that will actually begin the 7-year tribulation period will be the signing of a strong binding covenant for 7 years between Antichrist, the head of a future revived Roman Empire on the one hand, and the nation of Israel in the Middle East on the other hand. But Daniel 9:27 and other passages make it very clear, it'll only be for the first 3.5 years of that 7-year tribulation period that Israel can feel so safe and so secure by this great world leader, Antichrist, defending it. And the reason we have to say that is Daniel 9:27 and Revelation 13 make it very clear that in the middle of the tribulation period, Antichrist is going to come to Jerusalem. He's going to take control of that city. He's going to take control of a new temple that the Jews will have rebuilt there. He'll put an end to the sacrifices and offerings they've reinstituted. And then he's going to take his seat in that temple, according to Paul in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, and make the blasphemous claim that he's God. Revelation 13 implies that in the middle of the tribulation period, Satan is going to take possession of the Antichrist. And once Satan takes possession of him, the arrest of Daniel 9:27 indicates that during the second half of the 7-year tribulation period, Antichrist is going to wage war against the Jews and desolate the nation of Israel throughout the entire second half of the 7-year tribulation period. So it's only during the first half of the tribulation period that Israel will feel so safe and so secure it has let down its own guard militarily. But in the second half, the ruler that guaranteed its national security is going to turn against the nation of Israel and try to wipe it off the map permanently from planet Earth, desolate it throughout the entire second half of the tribulation period. Now, to go on here, we said this whole idea of feeling so safe and so secure is not the situation of Israel today. So the only time between now and the second coming of Christ that Israel will have that situation is the first half of the tribulation period as a result of Antichrist's strong covenant to protect Israel for 7 years. But Daniel 9:27 reveals that in the middle of the tribulation period, Antichrist will turn against Israel and desolate it throughout the second half of the tribulation. Now, what will be the motive of these attackers? Russia, Iran, Sudan, Libya, Turkey. What will be their motive for coming against the nation of Israel in the Middle East? Well, we're told what it'll be. God said to the attackers, again, this is in Ezekiel 38, "On that day it shall come to pass that thoughts will arise in your mind, You will make an evil plan. You will say, I will go up against a land of unwalled villages. I will go to a peaceful people who dwell safely, all of them dwelling without walls and having neither bars nor gates, to take plunder and to take booty, to stretch out your hand against the waste places that are again inhabited, and against the people gathered from the nations who have acquired livestock and goods who dwell in the midst of the land. Ezekiel 38, verses 10 through 12. This will be the attitude of Russia and its allies when they come against the nation of Israel in the Middle East. Now, as we saw earlier in Daniel 11, when Antichrist is in Egypt, he's conquered the entire land area of Egypt. He's in the process of robbing Egypt of all of its resources and wealth. He's going to receive very disturbing news from the north and from the east that'll trouble him. The question is, what is the essence or the content of that disturbing news? Well, let's take a look here. While he's in Egypt plundering that nation of its wealth and resources, he'll receive disturbing news from the east to the north. Where is Iran located geographically in relationship to Israel? Due east. Where is Russia located in relationship to the nation of Israel? Straight north. Where is Turkey in relationship to Israel? Also north of Israel. All right? But what about the other nations? The other nations named here, Sudan and Libya. Sudan is straight south of Israel because it's straight south of Egypt. Libya is southwest of Israel as well. So what about those two nations? If they are going to join in with this multinational attack against Israel in the future, probably, again, during the first half of the tribulation period, how would they go if they're going to move their troops on land? They'd have to go right through the nation of Egypt because Sudan is straight south of Egypt. If they were going to join in with Russia and Iran and Turkey and all the rest, they'd have to come right up through the nation of Egypt. Libya is west of Egypt. For them to come by land to join in this attack against Israel, they'd have to come across Egypt. But who's in Egypt at this time? The Antichrist with his powerful revived Roman army. And so Sudan and Libya wouldn't dare take on the Antichrist there in Egypt. And so it seems to me, in light of that, that they will be forced to put their troops in boats and go straight north through the Mediterranean Sea and join in with Turkey and Russia from the north, and come down from the north, those forces, while Iran is coming in from the east against the nation of Israel. Sudan south of Israel, Libya southwest of Israel, and as we indicated, in order for those two nations to join the attack by land, they would normally travel through Egypt from the south and the southwest. But Antichrist will be in Egypt with his powerful army at the time of the attack. And in light of that, in all likelihood, the combined armies of those two nations will be no match for the Antichrist forces. And as a result, they probably will transport their armies north by boat through the Mediterranean Sea to join in with the forces of Turkey and Russia from the north. Now, what's going to happen here? How will Antichrist going to react to this attack against Israel? Again, he's down in Egypt, south of Israel. He receives this very disturbing news that his ally Israel has been jointly attacked by a massive military force of several nations coming against Israel from the east and from the north. How is he going to react to that? Keeping his covenant commitment to protect Israel, Antichrist, from what we're told in Daniel 11, verse 44, shall go out with great fury with the goal to destroy and annihilate many. When he gets that disturbing news down in Egypt, his ally Israel has been attacked by these massive military forces. Keeping his covenant commitment to Israel, he's going to try to rush his armed forces north, out of Egypt, up to the land of Israel, hoping to eliminate these massive military forces that are going to come against his ally Israel in the Middle East. But God intervenes before Antichrist gets there. Here's God's reaction to the attack against Israel. Before Antichrist gets to Israel, God will have intervened directly in world events to destroy the attackers. Destroy the attackers. This is what we read in Ezekiel 38. It shall come to pass at the same time, when Gog comes against the land of Israel, says the Lord God, that my fury shall show in my face. For in my jealousy and in the fire of my wrath I have spoken. Surely in that day there shall be a great earthquake in the land of Israel. God is going to supernaturally cause tremendous earthquake there in the land as these forces are coming in, like in where the mountains of Israel are. In my jealousy and the fire of my wrath I've spoken, in that day there shall be a great earthquake in the land of Israel, so that the fish of the sea, the birds of the heavens, the beasts of the field, all creeping things that creep on the earth, and all men who are on the face of the earth shall shake at my presence. Tremendous earthquake. The mountains shall be thrown down. That earthquake will cause tremendous landslides of rock and dirt coming down upon these invading attackers. And the steep places shall fall, and every wall shall fall to the ground. I will call for a sword against Gog throughout all my mountains, says the Lord God. Every man's sword will be against his brother. Apparently, as these soldiers are coming down, now all these cataclysmic things they hadn't planned on are coming against them and wiping them out in their panic to try to get away from the rocks coming down upon them. If any of their fellow soldiers in front of them, they've already been wiped out by God's supernatural intervention directly into world events. Now that gives Antichrist a free hand to do what he wants in that whole part of the world. And I wouldn't be surprised, this is when you come to the exact middle of the seven-year tribulation period. Now, as we're going to see here, he comes to Jerusalem. Now he's going to take control of the temple. Now he's going to put a stop to the sacrifices and offerings that the Jews will have reinstituted there. And I wouldn't be surprised that when he gets up there and sees these forces have been wiped out supernaturally without human intervention, that he may take the credit for that supernatural intervention and say, look at what I was able to do against massive military forces without firing one man-made weapon. That proves I'm more than a man. I'm a God. I'm a God. And you people better worship me as God. This is when Satan, Revelation 13 strongly implies this, takes complete control of the Antichrist. The Antichrist. And so we read on here. It appears that Antichrist may take the credit for the destruction of this massive military force. He may point out that it was destroyed without any human warfare. And he'll claim that he did it supernaturally. Therefore, he's more than a man. He is God. We're told then in Daniel 11, verse 45, he goes to Jerusalem, to the holy mountain. That's where Jerusalem is located, between two seas, the Dead Sea on the east, the Mediterranean Sea on the west. And in the middle of the tribulation period, he puts an end to the sacrifices of Israel's temple, takes his seat in that temple, makes his claim to be God. This is clearly indicated, Daniel 9:27. Chapter 11, verses 36 to 39, Paul indicates this in 2 Thessalonians 2, verses 3 and 4. At that point, Satan takes control of him. Probably actually possession of him. Gives him power, we're told very clearly in Revelation 13, verses 4 through 6. Satan at that point will give the Antichrist power to continue for 3.5 years. It says 42 months. Well, 12 into 42, that's 3.5 years. That's the second half of the tribulation period. Satan takes complete possession of this powerful world ruler now in the middle of the tribulation period and gives him power and authority to continue his wicked rule in the world for the second 3.5 years of the 7-year tribulation period. And so we're told then in Daniel 9:27, as a result, Antichrist turns against Israel now. And he desolates Israel throughout the second half of the tribulation period until Christ returns. Until Christ returns. According to Daniel chapter 9 and verse 27. Now, let me point out some other things here to you. We've talked about, by the middle of the tribulation period, the Jews will have rebuilt a new temple. And they will reinstitute their sacrificial system that God gave them under the Mosaic Law, which means they're going to reinstitute their priesthood. And I don't know how much you're aware of this, but for several decades now, there's been an organization in the city of Jerusalem that's comprised of two groups of people. One are scholars who go back through ancient records to discover everything about Israel's priesthood of the past, to discover everything with regard to the sacrifices, exactly how they are to be administered and all the rest, and to rediscover the instruments of music that were played in the worship services at the temple and at all the rest. And it's an organization called the Temple Institute. And they have a headquarters right there in the city of Jerusalem. And so that scholars do the ancient research to rediscover all this information for a new temple. And then they turn that over to skilled craftsmen. And the skilled craftsmen, for decades now, they have been making the priestly garments of the priests, just as they were in Bible times. They've been making all the instruments of sacrifice. And they've even are making now the long silver, solid silver trumpets that were played in the worship services, and along with the people singing their praises of God at everything. And we've had the privilege of being in their headquarters more than once. It's a fascinating thing to go through and see this. If you ever get to Jerusalem, make sure you get to the Temple Institute and see this. You can see the priestly garments already made, and instruments of worship, and all these other things as well. So now they've got the materials for this, to reinstitute it. But now they also have to have priests. And up until about 10 to 20 years ago, the way they would choose a man to train him for the priesthood is look at his family name. You know, the Hebrew word for priest is Kohen. And so if a man's family name is Cohen, C-O-H-E-N, that's from the word for priest, a pretty good indication that man is in the priestly line for Israel from ancient times. But now, National Geographic magazine, in the October issue, I think it was in 1999, had a fascinating article about DNA genetic code research. And they indicated that now through DNA genetic code research, they have found out men who are literally biological descendants of Aaron, the first high priest, Moses' brother, that God appointed for Israel. That men who have a unique marking on the Y chromosome of their genetic code, they're the only men on the face of the earth who are in the priestly line of Aaron, who are biological descendants of Aaron. So now, instead of having to look at their family name, what they do is, they do is take a cotton swab, rub it on the inside of the cheek, that gives their whole genetic code. And National Geographic showed Orthodox Jewish men at the Wailing Wall in Jerusalem saying, am I one of them? Give me a cotton swab. I want to know if I'm one of the priests, you know, for the future temple. So now they know who the priests can be, validly. And they've got all the instruments of worship and all the rest. There was a Jewish couple from lived in Atlanta, Georgia, who several decades ago moved to Jerusalem permanently. Ferrari is their name. And that couple have taken years going through ancient records to rediscover the shape, the methods of material and everything else in the harps that were played in the worship service in the temple. And they've rediscovered that. And they are making those with incredible handcraft, everything. Ellie and I had the privilege one time of being in there. We talked with Mrs. Harari. Now, these are not saved people. But she said, we believe God has brought us here to Israel so that when the new temple can be built, that all the harps will be ready to go. And you could buy some from them if you would like as well. But on top of that, there was a Jewish lady who lived in Paris, France, almost all of her life. Her life work was music. That dear woman spent incredible years and years and years of painstaking research through ancient Jewish documents to rediscover the temple music, to which they would sing some of the words of the Psalms and of Isaiah and other portions of the Old Testament. Her name was Suzanne Hake Ventura. And she has rediscovered that true temple music, and she published a massive book on it. The English language edition is entitled The Music of the Bible Revealed. It's about 600 pages long. And professional music scholars all over the world have studied her work, and they're absolutely convinced she has rediscovered the true temple music. And we've had the privilege of hearing some recordings of that music being sung in the Hebrew language of some of the Psalms and portions of Isaiah. I think she set music to the whole Hebrew script of Song of Solomon, Ecclesiastes, and other major portions. She's no longer with us. When I first learned about her, probably about 20 years ago, she was well up into her 80s and all the rest. But now they know who the priests are. Now they know they've got all the instruments of worship necessary to go. They've got the harps to go. They've got the music now to go and all the rest. But the problem is, how will they get permission to build a new temple on the Temple Mount? Because the Muslims are in control of that. And they say, over our dead body, will a Jew even be allowed up here to pray and everything? All we know is there are three key passages in the Bible that make it very clear there will be a new temple there operating with the priesthood and the Old Testament sacrifices until the middle of the tribulation period, when Antichrist then takes control and gets rid of all those sacrifices because he wants to be worshipped as the only true and living God. As Paul says, he'll take his seat there and make his blasphemous claim that he is God. And then both Daniel 7 and Revelation 13 indicate when that happens, he's not only going to wage war against the Jews and desolate the Jews throughout the second half of the tribulation period, but we're also told he will wage war against the saints, against people who get saved during the tribulation period and who reject his claim to be God. He's going to have them executed, Antichrist will, at least throughout the entire second half of the seven-year tribulation period. So these are some of the things that the Bible reveals to us with regard to the nation of Israel in the future. But look at the nations that are involved there. Most of them are the very nations we're hearing about in the news now. And you cannot help but wonder, is God now beginning to set the stage in the world for these future events to take place during the future seven-year tribulation period? Lord willing, in our worship service, we'll pick up. We're going to look at other things that the Bible teaches about the future of Israel and things going on with regard to that. Let me just share one other thing. The Temple Institute, you know, there was a large menorah in the holy place, not the Holy of Holies, but the holy place that illuminated it, out of solid gold. The Temple Institute has perfectly reproduced that. It's gigantic, maybe about this wide, maybe stands about this high, made out of gold and all the rest. And they have it located right in the center of the street, outside the entrance to their Temple Institute headquarters and everything. But it's totally encased in clear glass, but bulletproof glass, so that nobody can destroy it, you know, with bullets or anything like that. And you're walking up the street, you can see this. It's just an incredible thing to observe. So Lord willing, we'll pick up in the next hour with more things the Bible says about the future of Israel. Thank you.